Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Welcome, family and friends, to New Life Live. This is Chris Williams, and I'm filling in for Steve today in the driver's seat, and I have with me the good doctors, Dr. Jackie Mack Harris and Dr. Jill Hubbard. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing good, yeah.
I'm so excited to be with you guys today. I never know who I'm going to get in studio.
Right?
Right? It's always a nice surprise when I open the door.
Yes. Well, it's good to see you. What we have the Emotional Freedom Workshop coming up here just over a month on April 30th. And one of the things is, like, I think we mistake emotional freedom from being free from emotion, right?
Oh, yeah.
So hence, that's where our medicators.
Well, if
come
you
in.
Think if you think emotion is bad, right?
Yes.
Like I shouldn't be feeling, or if I'm feeling something's wrong,
yes,
then you would think that.
Absolutely. So if emotional freedom isn't free from emotion, what is it?
I think it's free to have and be in your emotions, like free to experience them without it being bad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? They're, instead of being stuck and locked behind emotion and stuck and locked in this place of terror because of your emotion, you get to get freedom from that fear around it and just learn how to be present with yourself, be present with others, be present in your emotions. So I would say it's the freedom to experience and express emotion.
Yeah.
Right. There's an acceptance in it, being able to accept what you're feeling so that you can work with it instead of shaming yourself against the emotion, right?
Yeah.
Or feeling like it's going to take you under, right?
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's okay. And as you work through it, it doesn't last forever. The intensity doesn't.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're like muscles. They need to be worked out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so to be able to experience an emotion and know what to do with it, we've actually got to feel. And like we say around here, feel and deal.
Yeah.
So with that said, we typically go to two categories. Some of us like to live apart from our emotions, so avoiding them altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's living, you know, above our emotional experience. Mm-hmm. Others of us tend to get overwhelmed and controlled by our emotional experiences, and that's living underneath our emotions. Really, emotional freedom is learning to live with our emotions.
Yeah.
You know, and really what that means is that our emotions are a feedback mechanism to how we're experiencing life.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use a metaphor as a dashboard. And these dashboard of emotions are lighting up different experiences that show us really, really important information about ourselves and the world and the people around us.
Absolutely.
And so when we move to things like avoiding or medicating emotions, we go into emotional atrophy, right? Just we become weakened. And so this idea of, like, well, I'm strong because I don't show emotions is actually an oxymoron.
It is. It's actually weakness.
Yes.
It's an inability and an intolerance of being able to step into the emotional realm.
Yes.
Well, and the other aspect of this is, like, we can see people who are out of control. And they're just saying, well, I'm being authentic, or I'm just being me.
Yep, just it's keeping, like, it real. Keeping it 100.
Keeping it real, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, actually, you're losing yourself to the overwhelm of a particular emotion. So give us a call today. We want to help you. And if you struggle in this area, the Emotional Freedom Workshop is coming up April 30th. If you register by April 15th, you will save $100. And you could probably go out for a really nice dinner and eat your emotions after that. I'm just kidding. So So, no, give us a call, 1-800-229-3000. We want to help you today. We got great, great workshops. Please check us out at newlife.com, and we'll be back right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. And again, we are really excited to be with you today. I am really excited because I have Dr. Jill and Dr. Jackie with me, and we're going to go right to the phone.
Two Dr. J's.
Two Dr. J's. Yeah. I love it. Yes. And Chris.
And Chris.
And we're going to go to Chuck in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who listens to us on Sirius XM. Chuck, are you there? We'll play. Oh, there you are. Chuck, what's going on today, man?
Yes. I have a question. I've been struggling with this problem for some time now, and it's about the past, you know, the things that you've already confessed or went to the Lord about, you know, things back in years ago, and the people come around, and it just keeps coming up and coming up, and I just don't know how to put that, bury that. You know, I just don't know how to get rid of the, it just keeps coming up at certain times. You know, you'll be thinking about something and this deed that you're not real proud about comes back up. I just don't know how to get that out of my head.
Yeah, yeah. So sometimes it's the sin done unto us, but sometimes it's the sin that we have done unto others. And it sounds like what is sticking to you in some painful ways is the mistakes and the sins that maybe you have done to others. Is that correct, Chuck?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, give us for instance.
It sounds like you're feeling, you're carrying guilt.
Yeah.
Right? And we're kind of wondering, is this appropriate guilt or not?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it even goes back to sometimes in when I was in school, you know, and things that I would do then. You know, I'm a completely different person like most of us, but it's, you know, I was a pretty rough guy at one time, and there is some of the people, you know, that I had done hurt to. I mean, not physically, but mentally, probably just saying things. I repeated my mother a lot, and I'm finding out now that those mother's sayings, really, now that I see, they're really not proper, I guess, for today.
Yeah.
And you know, some people I went back and tried to it's an ex-wife. One of them was an ex-wife, and I went back and tried to make good, and you know, and it just got worse. So
yeah,
you know, it just keeps those things popping up in my head, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the things
so,
like that.
So what's the question for us? How can we help you today?
How do I keep that from coming up in my head?
Okay.
You know, I'm already over it, and the Lord has forgiven me, I'm sure, and I just won't let it go. I can't get it to stop coming up in my head.
Chuck, you know, you said you're over it and the Lord has forgiven you, but you didn't say you have forgiven you. I think about the scripture that talks about forgiving 7 times 70, and we always typically associate that with forgiving someone else, and we don't necessarily realize how we actually do that. Every time it comes up is an opportunity for you to think on it, think on how different you are today, and to forgive yourself, to forgive that situation. It's a part of what's changing you and continuing to change you and grow you. The fact that it comes up and you feel remorse about it shows that you've repented. It's a reminder of where you used to be, but you're not there anymore. And owning the story of your life helps create the change that you want to see, right? You're owning the story. You're admitting what's happened. You've tried to make amends, but it is your story. And just like we may not forget the Terminator movie we saw back in the 80s, you're probably not going to forget that experience that you had. But you can forgive yourself for the experience.
But I think there's a distinction between we're never going to forget things, mm-hmm. right? Our story is written and having it haunt us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, Chuck, if it feels like it's haunting you. You know, 12-step programs have a wonderful process for this where they mm-hmm. make a list of people they have harmed. Mm-hmm. And then they make amends when it's not harmful to do so, right? Mm-hmm. Going through that process and doing a personal inventory, I think, can be really, really helpful. But our sense of peace and rest about something cannot be dependent on how those people respond to our mm-hmm. amends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that's really important. Sometimes where a person is at, they're not ready to forgive or even, you know, even hear you. And so that can feel haunting if we're waiting for them to release us from what we've done.
And I think we are often hearing things and seeing things in the media that we recognize we may have done or said mm-hmm. in the past. And mm-hmm. the person that we are today would never do that, would never
right.
say that. We've learned, we've grown and grown, and I think it's going to come up and you're going to feel it, but you get to have a conversation with yourself about how much differently you view the world, how much differently you view people, how much differently you just feel about life. And you might need to spend some time with yourself just processing all of that. And as Jill said, the 12-step process is a great process to work through some of these things. Have you gone through recovery?
I went to a church had a sort of that type of thing. They had Rick Warren had a 8-week thing that we all studied together mm-hmm. on, you know, and that was it, write the lists and that. And I guess y'all hit it that I have a hard time forgiving myself.
Yeah.
I guess. Mm-hmm. And that goes very deep mm-hmm. because, you'll be the first to hear this because I've never said it to anybody. My ex-wife, I mentioned, prior to getting married, I was 19 and she was 19 and she got pregnant. And I told her, I says, I'm not getting married because you're pregnant. And she went and had an abortion.
Mm.
So I've been dealing with that. I'm 63 mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just won't leave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Chuck, you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And thank you for sharing that with us, Chuck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
And it's important to share with others.
And because you haven't told anyone, now you have.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's that time to keep letting it go. You know, Steve shares his own story.
I was going to say, this is part of Steve's story, yeah, Chuck, and are you aware of that?
Yeah.
I wasn't aware.
That he paid for an abortion. And part of his restitution is why he, for years, went to crisis pregnancy centers mm-hmm. to talk about it and to talk about, especially men. You know, women mm-hmm. go through it, and they're haunted for years. And there's a lot to aid women. But men also suffer, and it's not talked about enough.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? That there, when you realize that that's a life, it's so hurtful and shameful.
Yes.
And yet, it's a mistake that you made mm-hmm. that is not beyond forgiveness.
Absolutely.
And the other thing, Chuck, is that when we find ourselves deep in our pain, deep in the hurt of ourselves and other people, deep in our sin, there's this thing that happens called shame. Mm-hmm. And it wants to identify us as less than, mm-hmm. unworthy, unlovable. And therefore, when any mistake comes up, it becomes evidence against us in a long, long rap sheet of things that to affirm mm-hmm. this shameful message.
Right. It's against our very being,
yes.
who we are, instead of our behavior.
Right. We get we go away from I did something wrong or I did something bad to I am bad or I am wrong, like as
despicable,
a person, right?
Or
like your character, and that's the part. The haunting is keeping that going. It's fueling those negative, that negative self talk and that negative self image. When you made a mistake and you asked for forgiveness about that mistake, you regret it, there's nothing you can do to go back, but I think there is, it sounds like, a need for you to actually be able to sit in it. I was just sharing with someone the other day, sometimes we tend to shove our emotions down, and then we wonder why we don't get over them, but we shove them down. They're in there.
They don't go away.
They don't go away, because we've just shoved them down. But if we experience them and let them have their space in reality, then we can move past it.
But it's not just in and of ourselves. Mm-hmm. We have to bring our shame into relationship.
Yes.
And so, Chuck,
yes,
I'm really proud of you for taking this step today and letting us know. And I would encourage you to get involved in a group process where you can, again, share this and let people love you and weep with them and really grieve the loss of this child that has stuck with you all these years.
Yes.
And Chuck, I also want to encourage you, get into a therapy process. Mm-hmm. Go see, I'm sure we have good therapists there in the Pittsburgh area through our New Life Network. And I just think that being able to process this, because I want you to go back and I want you to start exploring those things your mom said to you. Mm-hmm. Because those are real pain points. I believe that that is directly impacting your inability to forgive yourself for the things that you've said to other people. And so we're going to send you a copy of Forgiving Your Mothers and... What's the name of the book, Jill?
Forgiving Your Fathers and Mothers?
Yes, thank you. Okay. I was going to get that. Mothers and Fathers. Forgiving Your Fathers and Mothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it invites you into that process, mm-hmm. but also this forgiveness of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Chuck, thank you so much for calling in today. And we're really proud of you, and we want you to continue on your healing and growth journey. And so with that, let's go to the next caller. Let's go to Sarah in Houston, Texas, who listens on the podcast. So, Heather, or Sarah, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, how can we help you today?
So, my brother and I have always been very close. About three Christmases ago, my son, who was 10 at the time, and my niece, who is about 14, he touched her, and she was very upset about it, because she said that she told him to stop, and she said that he did it again. So this is after... I heard this like after we had already left Ohio, which is where my brother lives, and it had been like 2 weeks since we had talked. I knew there was something wrong, and they never told us about it.
Hmm.
So I finally got it out of him, and he said, your son touched my daughter. And so immediately I was like, oh no, that's horrible. And I picked him up from school, I talked to him, and he immediately said, well, she had a heating blanket on, which we don't have down here in Texas, and he wanted to feel it, and so he did, and he said that's what he was doing. So, you know, we want to think the best of our children, but at the same time, I think my husband and I really investigated, and we felt like he didn't do it for sexual purposes.
Yeah.
Maybe he was curious, I don't know. So it's really split our families apart, and I talk to my brother, but I don't talk to the rest of his family. I haven't seen my niece and nephew. You know, we went to her high school graduation to support her, but we felt really like we weren't wanted there.
Yeah, so what's
we've reached out, we've tried to talk, we've tried to heal, we've invited them here.
So, Sarah,
we've really tried.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me get to a question that we can help you with, because we're coming up against a break here. So, yes, what's the question for us? How can we help you?
Okay. How do I go on with the hurt? Do I just give up and not contact or do I keep trying? What do I do?
Okay. Yeah.
In this situation, because it hurts so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is a very painful experience that does split families. And so we're going to head to a break here in just a minute, but we're going to help you out when we come back. But I just want everyone also to know that we have a Transforming Grief workshop coming up on May 7th. It's online. Don't have to go anywhere. You just sign up for it. And so let us help you if you're struggling in your grief process. We'll be right back.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live, and we're talking to Sarah. Sarah, you're in a very difficult situation where your 14-year-old niece was saying that she was inappropriately touched by your 10-year-old son, even though she asked him to stop. You guys did some investigation. I'm just curious, Sarah, was there any talks with your son about what is appropriate, what's inappropriate?
Yes, we have talked to him even before that through his whole life. We've been trying to teach him, you know, what is appropriate for him and for other people with him. So
and have the families got together and talked? I mean, have the adults all gotten in the room and talked through this?
No, because they live in Ohio. We live in Texas. Like, when we were down there, we were there for 5 days, and we were there for, like, a couple more days, but they never brought it up.
Okay.
So it's very hard to talk. I've tried to call my sister-in-law. I've talked to my niece and, like, apologized. It's like they have nothing to do with it.
They don't want to deal with this as a family, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
When you talked to the family, were you explaining your process of investigation with your son and maybe sharing what he said, kind of giving the other perspective?
I did. Mm-hmm.
And so that might be a part of why they don't want to talk to you, because she's hurt and she just wants to hear, "I'm sorry, I wish that hadn't happened." The reasons why it happened in that situation may have felt like excuses and protecting him. And so that might be something else that you want to discuss with them, if maybe they experienced it that way. And then just talking about bodily autonomy, whether he meant it sexually or not. There is a tendency, and your niece may be in that phase of life in school where boys are grabbing things that we don't want grabbed. And, you know, that can sometimes go on into adulthood. I work with couples where that's a part of the problem, is the wife doesn't like that the husband is, you know, turning into a 13-year-old boy and grabbing her butt every time she walks
being
by.
Being really impulsive.
Right? And he just doesn't think of it as being attached to a person. He just sees these body parts that he gets excited about. And so when she said stop and he didn't, even if he was just being an annoying little cousin, he didn't respect her bodily autonomy. He didn't respect her no.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem is, whether he meant it sexually or not, even if it had just been he was playing with her game, right? Like,
yeah, he was taking my stuff.
Right. He did not respect her no. And that's the bottom line. And that's the part that maybe isn't being talked about. Regardless of whether it was intended to be sexual or not, it was a boundary crossing. And she was... Go ahead,
Sarah. I did call her, and I talked to her about it, and I did say, you know, I'm sorry that it happened, no matter the motivation. I don't know if I can talk to my son about it again. That was almost 4 years ago.
Well, he's 14 now, though, but so this might be a good time to talk to him about it again.
Mm-hmm. So you talked to your niece about it, you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My brother said it was too late. Like, it's too late. Like, so am I just not ever going to have a relationship with her? The only time I hear from the other three members of his family are when we send them gifts. And they say thank you.
So, and is this a pattern in your family where if somebody does something wrong, they get cut out?
No, I don't think so, but I feel like it is with his family, because, like, they don't really see her family anymore either.
Yeah.
So maybe it is with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where once you cross their boundaries, there's no coming back. And that's really sad. And I hear that you've mm-hmm. tried in all different ways. And, you know, one of the mm-hmm. things is to say, what do you need from us mm-hmm. to be able to mm-hmm. be back in relationship, yeah. right? We miss you. We're grieved that something could destroy our relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes...
My niece is in college now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that, so. Sarah, in these situations, what you want to try to do is play the long game. And I know it's been 4 years, and that's going to be really painful. Mm-hmm. But we can only do what we can do, right? And as far as, hey, we can own a mistake, we can try to work through it, talk through it, ask for forgiveness, and make the corrections. But we can't make another person reconcile.
Right.
And so that, so you're right to say that a lot of these situations are, unfortunately and painfully, a grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't want to do is keep you, your son, or anyone else stuck in a situation that happened 4 years ago.
Right. But I'm wondering, I think, Jackie, you might be right. You know, he's 14 now. So now he has the mind of a 14-year-old, mm-hmm. although
yes.
not a girl. But maybe it's time for him to even write his cousin to make an amends about what happened previously. To show that he's in a different spot and just reach out to, she's at college, just to reach out to her directly and kind of own his part in it and what he's done in his maturing process to see it differently.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I just want to encourage, Sarah, you, myself, and all other parents out there of young people.
Mm-hmm.
I have two young boys, and that my desire and what we're working on is that sexuality and development is an ongoing conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a one-time talk, or it's not after an incident. It's an ongoing conversation. So, Sarah, we're going to send you a copy of Every Young Man's Battle.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't to shame anyone, because it's not shameful. It's just a way that introduces and helps us talk through these mm-hmm. issues of sexuality. And We hope for reconciliation for you and your family, but more than anything, we hope for ongoing health for you guys. Thank you for calling in, and we're going to be right back right after this.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the new member thank you gift of the Life Recovery Bible Personal Size, the one-year Life Recovery Prayer Devotional, the New Life Journal, a New Life Pen and Highlighter, and a New Life Zippered Tote to hold it all. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. And Jackie, we were just talking at the break, and we just see kind of some of these patterns that happen when sort of abuse is still in the air, or at least inside of us.
Yeah.
Well, what is that?
Yeah, sometimes we can't understand why someone would, you know, have such a harsh boundary and be mm-hmm. so cut off, but there may be something that that someone in that other side of the family maybe has experienced. And sometimes when we've had experiences and now they're triggered because it's happening, or it feels like it's happening with our children, it's hard to see it in any other way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there could be some work to do mm-hmm. in terms of trauma in the family that you might just not know about. And so for the one side, it's just, I have to grieve this because, again, I can't cross a person's boundary by forcing them
right.
to let me back into their life, right? But at the same time, I'm just confused as to what the issue is. Well, We might need to respect the fact that there may be some things in that other person's life that we'll never know about.
Right, which that, makes them seem like they're overreacting to a situation that probably could have been resolved with everybody sitting down. And teaching the kids what's appropriate.
And so when we hold on to our trauma, we then pass that down to our children.
Yes.
And so that generational transmission of trauma, something happens to, for example, mom or dad, it changes the way they do life. It creates new rules and the way they function in society and their family, and then that gets passed down to children. And it doesn't. It's not because we're not talking about it because of a trauma. It's just the way we do things in our family.
It just
becomes the norm. And so I think we can be careful about that by taking care of our trauma. Find a good trauma therapist and work through some of our issues so that we're not passing.
So it doesn't
our
control us
to our children.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of passing down
trauma,
passing down trauma.
Oh, Larry, there you are.
So, so Larry.
Yes, sir.
Oh, you're muted.
I'm not on. Hello, 1, 2, 3.
There you go. Take Jill's mic. There you go. Larry.
Scoot over. Yes, sir.
Sorry.
I'm here.
Don't pass down, but pass on some good news to us.
All right. Well, the good news is New Life is functioning well.
I love it.
I love that. We need to keep functioning well, and it's going to take support to do that. So I always come in and read testimonies, and I hope you make the connection that I read the testimonies so you know how different this ministry is and the difference it makes in people's lives, and it's worth supporting. So here's one from Every Man's Battle, and it is coming up again here in Columbus, Ohio, on the 8th of April. So you can drive there from most anywhere. It's right in the heartland of our country. So guys, consider coming to this workshop. Here's what this gentleman said. I have hope for myself coming out of this weekend. Previously, when I tried to confront my addiction, I went the Rambo route and always failed. I read the appropriate books, but I couldn't identify or engage with them. But in coming here and finding the community, my eyes were opened in so many ways. I understand more, I'm engaged more, I see the cycle, and I see where I am in it. I'm beginning to learn how my descent into this temptation began and why it still affects me today. However, this knowledge and understanding is why I see hope for myself and my marriage. I'm now better prepared to address my faults, shortcomings, and sins, knowing that I have the support of my group. I feel confident in going back to my wife and repairing our relationship. I look forward to continuing to receive the support I feel from my group. I know it will help me sustain a change in me throughout my life. I don't know. I feel like if I had to compose a testimony, it would be something like that.
Yeah.
But we don't compose these. These are what guys say after they attend, and they have hope, and there's encouragement, and they know that there's victory over this stuff. And so many, like this guy, does the Rambo routine. I can do it on myself. I'm too proud to talk to anybody else and be transparent and let everybody know my hurts.
Absolutely. So. And you know, it's coming up April 8th in Columbus. Save $200 by registering on March 25th. Obviously, to everyone out there, there are guys who are struggling. And part of their struggle is they're stuck in cycles that also maybe restrict their finances. But a donation to our scholarship fund could really, really create more testimonies like this. And that's what we're about. Mm. We are about creating more better stories where God is rewriting someone's addiction into redemption.
Usually half or more of the scholarship money we get in a year goes to guys coming to Every Man's Battle. Because we do that one every month.
Yeah.
Thank you. Go help somebody.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for everything that you do for the ministry and for those around you. And we're going to go keep helping some people out there. We're going to go to Carol in Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on the podcast. Carol, are you there?
Hi.
How's,
how are you?
Good. How's it going?
Going good. Appreciate y'all. I just had to say that. I really listened to you for like 30 years. As long as it's been on the air.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, my husband and I have come up against a problem, and it's good that if you hear all of it. We had a pastor voted in, and he drinks alcohol. He doesn't hide it. Our assistant pastor. And he doesn't hide it. But I've seen it on Facebook, but it looks like he's picked the pictures down. And he has alcohol in his home. My husband said 20 bottles of liquor, and he has Bible studies there.
Mm-hmm.
My pastor, when we asked him about it, they voted him in as pastor, but there was no discussion about it.
Mm.
And he says, the pastor, when I talked to the pastor about it, he said that nowhere in the Bible does it say that you can't drink. And I feel like there's quite a few warnings there.
Yeah.
And then he quoted 1 Timothy 4:1
mm-hmm.
About putting too much on somebody's conscience, you know, unnecessarily.
Okay.
And he suggested the book The Conscience, which I read, Jim and I read together. And he said he wouldn't talk to the new assistant pastor about all the alcohol, but in the last couple of weeks, I talked to another assistant pastor, and he said that I was right about that. our pastor said that he was a responsible drinker, but he doesn't drink himself.
Okay, so Carol, I think we got a really good picture here. So what's the question for us? How can we help you?
Well, my husband left immediately, and he got all upset about it. And I have a lot of health problems. I don't want to leave, and my husband does. But he just got done with cancer treatments. I've taken the ADT shots for 2 years. He's not taking them now, so he's doing a lot better.
Oh.
And I'm very involved, but Jim just dropped it off. I'm sorry. And he didn't do anything anymore.
So, Carol, only because we're going to run out of time here, so give me a question. How can we help you?
Well, is it biblical? And do you think, is it a reason to leave the church? And what would we say? We're going to meet with this pastor. What would we say?
Yeah, so I'll jump in first, and
okay.
I'll just say, I agree that the Bible does not explicitly prohibit the use of alcohol. In fact, there are times where even Paul tells Timothy to have some wine for mm-hmm. a stomach issue. So he's using it for medicinal reasons. You know, when we see the use of alcohol, you know, throughout the Bible, human history, that sort of thing. However, we also need to deeply, deeply respect the warnings about this
mm-hmm.
and how many lives mm-hmm. have been impacted by alcohol, mine being one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, my childhood trauma is directly related to alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Yeah, us too, both, especially my husband.
And that makes a lot of sense. And we were just talking about that in the last caller.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to do a lot of work in my own recovery from my dad's alcoholism. That sounds kind of weird. So that mm-hmm. I no longer have a fearful relationship to it or a judgmental relationship to it. But I am working towards a responsible, and we want to be of sober mind,
yeah. mm-hmm.
right?
I think there's, you know, concern and warning. Pastors should be sober-minded. You know, if the pastor's drunk at 11 o'clock and there's an emergency and someone calls, that might be a challenge. But I also agree, I don't believe the Bible prohibits it. Jesus made wine at a wedding.
Right.
So
it does say don't get drunk with wine.
It says don't get drunk, and there's reason for getting drunk, just like we aren't to drive drunk. Mm-hmm. And so there's consequences for drunken behavior. The choice to stay or go, though, is going to be a personal choice. But I would consider, am I putting something on this man that is coming out of my own past and my own childhood mm-hmm. and my own traumas? What type of person and pastor is he? Are there other concerns about his lifestyle?
We'll be right back.
Yeah. find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. We're talking to Carol in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Carol, we're going to the break, we're just talking about, like, these are challenging situations because there could be my reaction to alcohol. There could be a biblical kind of teaching or instruction or pattern that we want to look at. And then there's the other person, the pastor mm-hmm. themselves. And there's a lot of nuances or variables that can play into that. But Jackie, I like to your point, we got to look at the character. Mm-hmm. Is the character of the pastor intact? And obviously we want to look at, you know,
well, I think
the drinking become a problem?
Right. I think you have to look at what is your church's stance on it mm-hmm. first, and then see how it is a stumbling block in your life, mm-hmm. right? That, like one of you said, that you may be putting on this pastor. Mm-hmm. And we hear that maybe he hasn't been the most sensitive about the fact that this is a stumbling block for you. And so I might approach it from that standpoint versus being more legalistic about, no, you shouldn't drink at all, yeah. and that coming out of a place of hurt because, you know, parents, past parents, right. were drinkers yeah. and were hurtful.
And I think as Christians, we have to be careful because sometimes we can point to certain things that are hard for us, and we can look at other people's lives and make a judgment that something is improper, mm-hmm. yet there are things that the Bible says for us not to do that we are currently doing. Like, you know, who's had shrimp lately, right? There, if we want to walk through the Bible and pull out every law and challenge a person on their lifestyles, then we're going to have to do that with the entire Bible, which is why Jesus came. Because mm-hmm. if we're going to do that, we're going to find ourselves lacking. Mm-hmm. None of us, not one of us, is good. Yeah. And so, therefore, our righteousness is through Christ. And so, what was the expectation for this pastor? And is he doing what he was called to do? Is he rightly dividing the word of truth? Mm. Is he a man that you can trust to explore the scripture with you? Is he someone that's going to show up for sick and needy? So, I would think about the work that he's doing at least as much as you're thinking about the fact that there's 20 bottles of alcohol in this house.
Yeah, yeah. And Carol, we're going to send you a copy of Take Your Life Back. I want you and your husband to go through that together because that really helps address how some of the things in our past affect how we are impacted by the things around us today. Mm-hmm. We're also going to send you a copy of Toxic Faith. And so Toxic Faith also helps us understand, hey, what are some things about our faith that can go wrong, that can really actually be damaging if we take them outside of what God intended them to be. So I think those two resources will be very helpful for you. And thank you so much for calling in. And we're going to get to one more call today. We're going to get to Eugenia in Frederick, Maryland, listening on WAVA. Eugenia, are you there?
I am. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really, really good. I'm going to make this really quick. My brother passed away last year. Mm. He had flown out to California and didn't check out of his hotel room, so the housekeeper went in to find out, you know, to check to see if he was okay, and he was dead. And the coroner said it was he had been snorting Percocet laced with fentanyl.
Mm. And oh, so, goodness.
This happened a year ago, and it'll be a year tomorrow, his death anniversary tomorrow. So I contacted the hospice because I know how to reach out to my resources, and I called them to say, do you have anything that could possibly help me right now? And they did. I'm seeing a woman tomorrow that specializes in overdose death.
Oh, good.
So I'll
good.
Yes, sir. Counsel me tomorrow, and she asked me, she said, I have this time for you if you want it. She said, if you want to spend the day doing this. And I was like, no, I need it. I need every bit of it. Everything yeah. that I could possibly get, I need it, because he was my baby brother.
Oh,
and
wow.
we had very different styles, and he really respected my boundaries because he knew I wasn't going to be a part of the lifestyle he was leading.
Yeah.
I was on a totally different path, and my brother, he respected my boundaries. He did not try to force his lifestyle on me.
he respected me for who I was. And the last thing I told my brother was that I loved him so much and that I was so proud of him.
Yeah.
Aww. And he was like, really? I said, yes, I love you and I'm so proud of you.
Wow.
And that was the last thing I said to my brother. But ours is the death anniversary, and I was just wondering, any of you on the panel, if you have anything that could possibly help me to get through this. I'm going to have his ashes sprinkled in his favorite ocean in Myrtle Beach.
Mm.
And celebration there this summer with my family. I just want everybody to go down with me to the water and sprinkle his ashes. And then that way I can kind of have some closure, and so that I can kind of send him off in a good way for me, you know, somewhere in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you have any, you know, I'm open.
Eugenia, it sounds like you're doing the things, like you are using your resources. We were talking earlier about how often, because of the way we've been socialized, we've been conditioned to not believe emotion is okay, right? So we talk about our emotional freedom workshop. But these emotions are real, and you're in them, and you're experiencing them, and they're hard. And so it feels like you are wide open to your brother, even though he was struggling with an addiction, and he respected you and you loved and respected him. I think this is going to be hard, because you're not going to shy away from the pain of this loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge, incredible loss. It's impacted your life greatly. And I would say give yourself permission to be in that. You're doing work so that you don't get stuck in that, and that you can work through and complete this grief process. I would just continue to be on that path.
Well, and I love that you are celebrating the good in your relationship with him, in spite of the fact that there is a reality there that you don't agree with, but that you can still hold both of those kind of side by side. Yeah. So I agree. You're stepping into it, and you're doing things to help yourself release him.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to point out that we also have a grief workshop that's going to be online May 7th that might be an additional help to you as well.
Yeah, Eugenia, there...
Okay, I forgot that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we struggle with grief is that my team was asking me the other day, it's like, Chris, what is your grief plan, you know, treatment plan? And I said, it depends on whatever person is in the room, right? Because it's so individualized, because your relationship with your brother is unique. You are unique. How you process is unique. So it needs to be the Eugenia grief process.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is that with grief, like anything else that's painful and hard, is we want to get through it quickly. And so we want to live beyond the grief. And I'm like, no, it doesn't work like that. I wish it did. I really do wish it did, but it doesn't. So,
I do too.
Yeah. And so we learn to make meaningful moments, and we attach to the meaningfulness of or allow the grief to take on new meaning for us by honoring your brother, honoring the relationship, honoring your sadness and your loss. And that's one of the things that we do at the Transforming Grief Workshop, is that we help people connect to themselves, connect to their grief, and then develop a plan to be able to work through it that really fits who they are and where they're at. And so I highly encourage you to check out our grief workshop on May 7th.
And thank you, Eugenia.
Yeah, and thank you so much for calling in. And thank you for loving your brother the way that you did.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That you held boundaries and still loved him. Yeah. And
let him know that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That is a shining example to the rest of us. We're going to send you a copy of Take Your Life Back, and hope that blesses you well. Thank you all for being with us today, being on this journey of God's transformation into healthier, better people. And we hope to talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.